Good evening, and welcome once again to Diabetes Forecast. I'm Dennis Kimball. For the next 60 minutes, I'll be reading diabetes articles from the online edition of Diabetes Self-Management Magazine. The first article this evening, which type of diabetes is worse? And other questions answered. This article appeared in the online edition of Diabetes Self-Management Magazine on December 27, 2022. If you have diabetes or know someone who has diabetes, you probably have a lot of questions as well as fears. Is the type of diabetes that you have more serious than another type? Will you have to take insulin? Are you going to lose your vision? Unfortunately, there is a lot of misinformation out there when it comes to understanding the differences between type 1 and type 2 diabetes. So in this article, we aim to get a few of your burning questions answered and hopefully dispel any confusion about your type of diabetes. Which type of diabetes is worse, type 1 or type 2? Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune condition in which the beta cells in the pancreas are destroyed. The beta cells make insulin, a hormone needed to help sugar or glucose in the blood get into cells to be used for energy. Without insulin, blood sugar levels get too high, and high blood sugars can cause damage to the body. Type 1 diabetes is less common than type 2 diabetes, accounting for between 5% and 10% of people with diabetes. Treatment for diabetes consists of taking insulin, either by injection, inhalation, or by using an insulin pump. Type 2 diabetes, which accounts for about 90 to 95% of diabetes cases, happens when the insulin that your body makes does not work as well as it should. The pancreas responds by making more insulin, but eventually the pancreas cannot keep up and blood sugars become too high. As with type 1 diabetes, high blood sugars can cause damage to the body and serious health problems. Type 2 diabetes can be treated in several ways, such as with healthy eating and physical activity, and by taking diabetes pills, insulin, and/or non-insulin injectable medicines. So which type of diabetes is worse? Neither. If you have type 1 diabetes, you might disagree, since you have to take insulin. If you have type 2 diabetes, you may feel that your type is worse, especially if you were diagnosed later in life and already have some complications. Realize that both types of diabetes can lead to serious complications if they are not managed. Your perception of your diabetes is greatly affected by how you approach managing it. In other words, if you tackle your diabetes management, taking your medication as prescribed, eating mostly healthy foods, making time to be active, and keeping up with regular appointments, tests, and exams, you can live a life easier and a lot healthier with diabetes. Do I need to take my diabetes seriously if I don't take insulin? Yes, absolutely. If you have not been prescribed insulin, and yes, many people with type 2 diabetes do take insulin, this does not mean that you can or should ignore your diabetes. Maybe you are doing fine with watching your food portions, counting carbs, and going for daily walks, for example. Or maybe you take diabetes pills, and those are doing the trick, hopefully along with healthy eating and exercise, to keep your blood sugars and A1C at safe levels. If either of these are the case, keep up the good work, but don't let your guard down. Type 2 diabetes can change over time, which means that the treatment that you use today may not work as well in a few years. Checking your blood sugars, getting your A1C checked regularly, as advised by your healthcare provider, are great ways to know how your diabetes is doing. Will I get diabetes complications? It's normal to worry about developing complications if you have diabetes. Heart disease, kidney disease, nerve damage, and vision loss are some of the more common and potentially devastating types of diabetes complications. Try not to let your fear control you, however. The good news is that rates of diabetes complications have decreased in the last 20 years, and people with diabetes are living longer, healthier lives, and with fewer complications than ever before. But in order to do this, you will need to take some steps and possibly make some changes to your lifestyle. Here's how. Get on a healthy eating plan that controls the amount of carbohydrate you eat, limits unhealthy fats, sugars, and sodium, and boosts your fiber intake. A registered dietitian can help you get started. Aim to be active for at least 150 minutes each week. Think 30 minutes 5 days a week. Lose some weight if you need to. Take all of your medications as prescribed, even if you feel fine. Get an A1C test at least twice a year, or more often if your provider recommends doing so. Talk with your provider about monitoring your blood sugars, either with a meter or a CGM, a continuous glucose monitor. Work on keeping your blood pressure and cholesterol at healthy levels. Here's a hint. An eating plan for diabetes can help with your heart health too. If you smoke, make a plan to quit. Make and keep appointments with your healthcare team. I have type 2 diabetes. Do I have to check my blood sugars? Monitoring your blood sugar, either with a meter or by using a CGM, is one of the best ways for you to know what affects your blood sugar readings. For example, you can see how food, physical activity, stress, and illness impact your diabetes. Then, based on your readings, you and your provider can make decisions about the best way to treat your diabetes. The American Diabetes Association states that certain people may benefit from checking blood glucose regularly, including those who take insulin, are having a hard time reaching blood sugar goals, are having a lot of high and/or low blood sugars, are having low blood sugars without the usual warning signs, have ketones from high blood sugars, and the final condition, you are pregnant. Getting your A1C checked is important as well, but monitoring your blood sugars lets you know on a daily or weekly basis how things are going. If you're unsure about monitoring or are worried about doing finger sticks, talk with your provider or diabetes educator. How am I going to manage my diabetes? I feel so overwhelmed. Whether you are new to diabetes or have had it for many years, it's natural to feel overwhelmed and even helpless. It may seem like there is so much to do, and you already have things to do in your life, such as going to work or school, or taking care of family. People approach diabetes self-management in different ways. Everyone's diabetes is different, so the way that you approach your diabetes will probably vary from someone else's. There is no sugarcoating the fact that managing diabetes can be hard, and some days will be better than others. There are actions that you can do to better cope with having diabetes. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, recommends the following. Pay attention to your feelings. If you've been feeling overwhelmed or frustrated for more than a week or two, That's a sign that you may need some help. Talk with your healthcare team about how you are feeling. Let your healthcare provider know. If you don't already have one, ask for a referral to a diabetes educator and/or a dietitian. You might also ask to meet with a counselor. If you are unable to afford your medicines or diabetes supplies, let your provider or pharmacist know. There are programs that can help you with the costs. Talk with family and friends and let them know how you are feeling, as well as how they may be able to help you. Focus on doing one thing at a time. Make a list of what you need to do every day and pick one to work on. Then move on to the next item on your list. Build some time into your day to do something that you enjoy. Talk with other people who have diabetes. They will understand what you're going through. There are community and online support groups that can be great resources for you. Look into support groups in your community. A diabetes educator can help you with this. Or check out this information about the diabetes online community. And that's the end of the article, but that last sentence refers to a footnote which gives the online address for the diabetes online community. And that is https://www.diabeteseducator.org/docs, that's D-O-C-S, /default-source/legacy, L-E-G-A-C-Y, /docs/resources/PDF/general/social with an uppercase S, /media with an uppercase M, /handout with an uppercase H, .pdf. And I'll repeat that web address for the diabetes online community, /social_media_handout.pdf. And those words, social media handout, the initial letters are uppercase. And that is the article, What Type of Diabetes is Worse? And Other Questions Answered. It was written by Amy Campbell, MSRD, LDN, CDCES. She's a registered dietitian and certified diabetes educator at Good Measures LLC, where she is a CDE manager for a virtual diabetes program. Campbell is the author of Staying Healthy with Diabetes, Nutrition and Meal Planning, a co-author of 16 Myths of a Diabetic Diet, and has written for publications including Diabetes Self-Management, Diabetes Spectrum, Clinical Diabetes, the Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation's newsletter, DiabeticConnect.com, and cdiabetes.com. The next article this evening, Dry Eye, Symptoms, Treatment, Prevention. This article appeared in the online edition of Diabetes Self-Management Magazine on December 29th, 2022. Diabetes is a condition that can affect the eyes. Some eye problems, such as diabetic retinopathy and macular edema, are well-known complications of diabetes. Dry eye is another eye condition that is common in people who have diabetes, although it's not always discussed. The American Diabetes Association, the ADA, shares that, based on research, 54% of people with diabetes have dry eye. Could you have dry eye? Read on to learn what it is, what the symptoms are, and what you can do to get relief. What is dry eye? Dry eye is a condition that affects millions of people in the United States every year. It's also known as dry eye syndrome, or DES, or dry eye disease, or keratoconjunctivitis, SICA. According to the National Eye Institute, the NEI, dry eye happens when your eyes don't make enough tears to stay wet, or when your tears don't work correctly. It can also involve tears not having the right consistency or evaporating too quickly. Tears are necessary to help maintain moisture on the surface of the eye and for clear vision. With many cases of dry eye, the surface of the eye becomes inflamed. If not treated, pain, ulcers, scars, and possibly loss of some vision can occur. Fortunately, dry eye is treatable, and there are a lot of things that you can do to stay comfortable. What are symptoms of dry eye? Any of the following symptoms could be a sign that you have dry eye: stinging or burning sensation in the eye, feeling like you have something gritty in your eye, stringy mucus in or around your eye, pain in the eyes, eye redness, eye fatigue, sensitivity to light, blurry vision, heavy eyelids, excess tears following periods of very dry eyes, and inability to wear contact lenses. You might notice that the above symptoms occur in certain situations. For example, staring at a computer screen, sitting on an airplane, being in an air-conditioned room, or being outside on a windy day can trigger dry eye symptoms. Of course, those symptoms can be linked with other eye conditions too. That's why it's important to see an eye care specialist for a proper diagnosis. What causes dry eye? The NEI states that normally, the glands in your eyes make tears that keep your eyes wet. Dry eye can happen when your eyes don't make enough tears, your tears dry up too fast, or your tears don't work well enough to keep your eyes wet. Tears are made up of three layers: fatty oils, aqueous fluid, and mucus. Certain factors can lead to problems with any one of these layers. These may include age. The older we get, the drier the eyes can get. Most people over the age of 65 have some degree of dry eye. Gender. Women are more likely to have dry eye than men due to hormonal changes. Medications. Blood pressure medications, birth control pills, antihistamines, decongestants, and antidepressants can reduce tear production. Medical conditions. Having diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, and thyroid problems, along with certain eye problems, raise the risk of dry eye. research shows that dry eye in people with diabetes is typically linked with a type of neuropathy called autonomic neuropathy. This neuropathy can affect the nerves that control tear production. Environment. Dry, windy, or smoky climates increase dry eye risk. Staring at a computer screen all day also increases the likelihood. Refractive surgery. Procedures such as LASIK, LASEK, and PRK can decrease tear production and lead to dry eye. People who wear contact lenses may be prone to having dry eyes, although contact lenses don't cause the condition. Why are people with diabetes at risk for dry eye? Constant high blood glucose or sugar levels raise the risk of a number of eye problems, such as retinopathy, macular edema, glaucoma, and cataracts, and dry eye. According to the ADA, diabetes affects the lacrimal glands. These glands make tears watery, as well as the oil glands, called meibomian glands, in the eyelids that prevent tears from evaporating too quickly. These problems can result from not enough insulin in the body. Insulin plays a role in the function of the lacrimal glands. High blood sugar levels that can damage nerves in the lacrimal glands and nerves in the cornea that help tears stay on the surface of the eyes. And inflammation that impacts the function of the lacrimal glands and impairs the flow of oils from eyelid glands that keep tears from evaporating. How is dry eye diagnosed? Dry eye may be diagnosed as part of a regular comprehensive eye exam. In addition, there are several kinds of tests that your eye doctor might use. One test is the Schirmer test, in which strips of paper are placed under your lower eyelids. After 5 minutes, the amount of tears absorbed by the paper is measured. Another test, called the tear breakup time, that goes by the acronym TBUT test, may be used. This test involves the use of special dyes in eye drops to determine how long it takes your tears to evaporate. And a tear osmolarity test can measure the composition of particles and water in your eyes. How is dry eye treated? Dry eye can be treated in a number of ways, although it cannot be cured. You may need to try one or more types of treatment to find relief. It's important to realize that dry eye can be an ongoing condition, and the type of treatment that's prescribed will depend on the severity of your symptoms, as well as the cause. Treatment options may include prescription eye drops. These medicines help your eyes make more tears, such as cyclosporine, that goes by the brand name Restasis, or lifitegrast, that goes by the brand name Xiidra, that's Xiidra, and the X is uppercase. Over-the-counter eye drops. These eye drops help make your eyes feel better. A few examples are olopatadine, it goes by the brand name of Pataday, and ketotifen, that goes by the brand name of either Alloway or Zatador. And then naphoxylene glycerin, goes by the brand name of Clear Eyes. You can also use eye moisturizing gels and ointments for relief. Procedures. Punctal plug. Your eye doctor may recommend plugging the drainage holes at the inner corners of your eyelids with punctal plugs. These are made of materials such as silicone or collagen and may be temporary or permanent. Punctal cautery. This is a surgical procedure that permanently closes the drainage holes. Lipiflow, that's L-I-P as in Paul, I-F-L-O-W. And the L, the first L, and the F are uppercase, but it's all one word. Lipiflow is a technology that applies heat and pressure on the eyelids to unclog blocked glands. Self-care. You can help your eyes feel better by trying the following. Applying warm compresses on the eyes. Cleaning the eyelids to remove debris and oil and to help the glands in your eyelids function properly. Massaging the eyelids. Blinking regularly when at the computer and when reading. Wearing sunglasses when outdoors. Using a humidifier at home and at work. Limiting time spent in the wind, in air conditioning, and in smoky rooms. Limiting screen time and taking breaks from staring at your screens for too long. Keeping your blood sugars in your target range as often as possible. Nutrition. Omega-3 fatty acids. Some studies show that increasing your intake of omega-3 fatty acids can help with dry eye management. The best sources of omega-3s are fatty fish, such as salmon, tuna, mackerel or herring, or speak with your doctor or a dietitian about taking an omega-3 fatty acid supplement in the form of fish oil or flax seed. Another form of nutrition, fluids. To prevent dehydration, drink plenty, roughly 8 to 10 glasses each day, of non-alcoholic fluids during the day, such as water, seltzer water, or unsweetened iced tea. Eat a nutritious diet. While more research is needed, there may be some basis for increasing your intake of potassium, vitamin A, zinc, and B vitamins to help with eye health. Do this by eating a variety of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, and seeds. You might also consider getting acupuncture to help with dry eye, but discuss this with your eye doctor first. Dry eye is an uncomfortable, chronic condition that can affect the quality of your life if it's not treated. However, there are treatments available. Be patient and work with your eye care specialist to find the approach that works best for you. That's the article entitled Dry Eye, Symptoms, Treatment, and Prevention. And it was also written by Amy Campbell, MSRD, LDN, CDCES. You are listening to Diabetes Forecast on VoiceCore. And again, I'm Dennis Kimball. I'm continuing to read from the online edition of Diabetes Self-Management Magazine, and this next article is entitled, Can People with Diabetes Safely Use Hot Tubs? This appeared in the online edition of Diabetes Self-Management Magazine on December 28, 2022. Enjoying a stint in a hot tub, for many people, is a form of relaxation. Others use hot tubs to recover after an injury or a strenuous workout. But are hot tubs safe for people with diabetes? What is a hot tub? If you've ever sat in a hot tub, you no doubt felt the tension melting away from stressed or overtired muscles. A hot tub is a large tub filled with heated water. You might use a hot tub to relax, to help heal an injury, or to socialize. In fact, hot tubs are intended for more than one person, unlike a bathtub. Most hot tubs are placed outdoors on a patio or in the backyard, although you can install a hot tub indoors as well. Sometimes people interchange the term hot tub with jacuzzi, but they're actually different. In fact, says the website thespruce.com, the actual website is called spruce.com, a jacuzzi is a brand name for a jetted tub, and it was originally developed for people who had arthritis. Jacuzzis tend to be found at high-end hotels and spas, but you can purchase one for your home, too. Hot tubs tend to be more affordable and more energy efficient than jacuzzis. Hot tubs continue to increase in popularity. The Pool and Hot Tub Alliance states that sales of hot tubs and swimming pools continue to rise, and the increased demand may, in part, be due to quarantining as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Are hot tubs safe for people with diabetes? Hot tubs work to boost your core temperature, and by doing so, cause your body to get into cooling mode, which means that blood vessels under the skin dilate to release extra heat. The increase in blood flow helps move nutrients throughout the body. The warmth of the water helps ease swelling and loses tightness in muscles. And being in the water takes stress off of your joints. Plus, mentally, sitting in a hot tub can help you unwind and de-stress. Potential negative effects from hot tubs. While most people with diabetes can enjoy spending time in a hot tub, it's important to consider the following potential negative effects. Risk of burns. Hot tub water temperatures generally range from 90 degrees to 104 degrees Fahrenheit, which is the standard maximum temperature. Temperatures above 104 degrees Fahrenheit could cause drowsiness and may lead to unconsciousness with subsequent drowning. People with diabetes who have neuropathy in the feet need to be especially careful with getting into a hot tub, or a bathtub for that matter, since neuropathy can decrease sensitivity to hot temperatures. It's always best to test the water before climbing in to any hot water by dipping your elbow in the water. Make sure, too, that the water temperature does not exceed 104 degrees Fahrenheit. Risk of heat exhaustion and heat stroke. Diabetes can, over time, cause damage to blood vessels and nerves, and this damage may impact sweat glands. If sweat glands are not functioning properly, two serious conditions can occur. Heat exhaustion, a condition that includes heavy sweating and an increased pulse and results from an excessive loss of water and salt. Heat stroke, an extremely serious condition in which the body's temperatures rise rapidly and the body is unable to cool down. Heat stroke can lead to permanent disability or death if you don't receive emergency treatment, according to the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. risk of low blood sugar or hypoglycemia. If you take insulin to manage your diabetes, be aware that high temperatures can affect how your body uses insulin. Hot water from the hot tub can increase the rate at which the body absorbs insulin. While hot tub therapy could help lower insulin requirements and lead to lower blood sugar levels, it's important to be aware that an occasional soak in a hot tub may cause your blood sugars to go too low. You might also not be as aware of low blood sugars when you're sitting in a hot tub as you usually are. Be especially careful to check your blood sugars often if you plan to spend time in a hot tub, and be prepared with treatment for low blood sugar if it occurs. By the way, if you use a CGM, a continuous glucose monitor, the sensor is generally water resistant, but the receiver is not. If you have questions about using your particular CGM in a hot tub, it is best to contact the manufacturer's customer service. Risk of a drop in blood pressure. People who have diabetes have double the risk of high blood pressure compared with people who do not have diabetes. High blood pressure typically requires a treatment with medication, and a common type of blood pressure medication is called a beta blocker. If you take a beta blocker and soak in a hot tub, the blood vessels beneath the skin dilate or widen. This can lead to a drop in blood pressure. Low blood pressure can cause you to feel dizzy, lightheaded or faint, or nauseated. Be sure to enter and leave a hot tub very slowly to allow your body time to adjust to temperature changes. Risk of heart issues. Studies show that regular soaking in a warm tub causes blood vessels to dilate, helping to lower blood pressure. A study published in May of 2020 in the journal Heart followed more than 30,000 people in Japan for about 20 years. As part of the study, people were asked about frequency of bathing in a tub. Those who took a bath nearly every day had a 28% lower risk of heart disease and a 26% lower risk of stroke compared with those who took baths less than twice a week. However, a sudden increase in body temperature can put extra stress on the cardiovascular system, leading to an elevated heart rate. For someone with reduced heart function or a potential coronary artery blockage, it could raise the risk of having a heart attack. Talk with your healthcare provider or cardiologist if you have heart disease or heart failure before going into a hot tub. Chances are that as long as the temperature is not too hot, you spend no more than 5 to 10 minutes in the tub, and you stay hydrated, it's safe for you to enjoy some hot tub time. Risk of dehydration. Having diabetes can increase the risk of becoming dehydrated. That's because high blood sugar levels lead to increased thirst, as well as an increase in urination. The thirstier you are, the more drink and the more you urinate, leading to even more fluid losses in the body. Being dehydrated causes your brain and other tissues and organs in the body to shrink. When the brain shrinks, it pulls away from your skull, causing a headache. Dehydration can lead to dizziness, confusion, and fatigue, making it even more dangerous to be in a hot tub. The treatment for dehydration is to replace lost fluids and electrolytes, according to the Mayo Clinic. Severe cases of dehydration should be treated in an emergency room with fluids and electrolytes given intravenously. Other potential concerns. In addition to the issues listed above, there are some other concerns and precautions to consider before going into a hot tub. Hot tubs can lead to a skin rash caused by the bacteria Pseudomonas aeruginosa. Limit the time spent in the tub and take a shower after you come out. Steam from contaminated hot tub water can carry Legionella that causes Legionnaire's disease, especially in people older than the age of 50 who have weakened immune system, smoke, and/or have lung problems. Other illnesses can result from parasites and bacteria in contaminated hot tub water. Make sure that hot tub water is clean and changed regularly. Also, avoid getting water in your mouth and never swallow hot tub water. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists advises against using hot tubs early in pregnancy, especially for long periods of time, as use is associated with birth defects. Some people with lung conditions, such as asthma, find that hot tub steam triggers a flare-up of their asthma. Also be aware that spending time in a hot tub, as well as in whirlpools, swimming pools, spas, and saunas, increases the risk of hot tub lung, a type of hypersensitivity pneumonitis caused by the lungs' reaction to liquid or solid droplets in the air that are contaminated by bacteria. Symptoms include coughing and shortness of breath. Well, that's the article entitled, Can People with Diabetes Safely Use Hot Tubs? And this article was also written by Amy Campbell, MS, RD, LDN, CD, CES. And this next article is a brief summary of recently published scientific research, and it's entitled Online Weight Management Program Leads to Glucose Improvement in Type 2 Diabetes. And it appeared in the online edition of Diabetes Self-Management magazine on December 30th, 2022. An online weight management program designed for people with type 2 diabetes led to weight loss as well as improved blood glucose control, according to a new study presented at Obesity Week, the annual meeting of the Obesity Society, and described in an article at Helio. Previous research has shown that in people with type 2 diabetes and overweight or obesity, losing body weight can result in blood glucose improvements. This seems to be the case regardless of exactly how weight loss occurs. Studies have shown that remission of type 2 diabetes, normal blood glucose levels without taking any glucose-lowering medications, is linked to the amount of weight people lose following bariatric surgery. At the same time, low-calorie diets and meal replacements have been shown to be effective for weight loss and diabetes remission. Following a low-carbohydrate vegan diet has also been shown to lead to weight loss and improved blood glucose control in people with type 2 diabetes. Even for people with type 2 diabetes who have a normal body weight or are only slightly overweight, losing weight has been shown to increase the chances of diabetes remission. For the latest study, 136 adults with type 2 diabetes took part in an online weight management program from WW, which is the new name, formerly known as Weight Watchers, that was tailored to people with diabetes. The average age of participants was 56.8, and 80% were women. All participants had a body mass index, or a BMI, a measure of body weight that takes height into account, between 27 and 50, ranging from overweight to severe obesity. Most participants, 62%, had an A1C level, a measure of long-term blood glucose control, between 7 and 8%, while 38% had an A1C level between 8% and 11% at the beginning of the study. An A1C level below 7% is widely recommended as a goal for people with diabetes, so all participants had room for improvement when it came to this measure. The online program lasted for 24 weeks, and 83% of participants completed it and were included in the study results. Online WW program linked to reductions in A1C. At the beginning of the study, participants with an A1C level of 8% or lower tended to have a slightly lower average BMI, 36.6 compared with 37.4 for participants with an A1C level above 8%. After 12 weeks of following the WW program, participants who started with an A1C level of 8% or lower saw an average A1C reduction of 0.3%, while participants who started with an A1C level above 8% saw an average drop of 1.1%. After 24 weeks of following the program, participants who started with an A1C level of 8% or lower had an average drop of 0.4% since the beginning of the study, while participants who started with an A1C level above 8% had an average drop of 1.4%. Both groups of participants, those who started with an A1C level of 8% or lower, and those who started with a higher A1C level, also experienced weight loss. After 12 weeks, average weight loss was 4.0% of body weight in the lower A1C group, and 3.7% in the higher A1C group. After 24 weeks, average weight loss was 5.1% in the lower A1C group, and 5.0% in the higher A1C group. These results are impressive, the researchers noted, because they're based on an online lifestyle intervention program that has lower barriers to participation than traditional lifestyle intervention programs, which tend to be much more expensive and time-intensive, using in-person meetings with nutrition experts and other health and fitness professionals. The next logical step, the researchers noted, would involve seeing if the WW program could lead to even greater improvement in A1C by pairing it with another intervention, such as a medication, and using continuous glucose monitoring, or CGM, to look at glucose patterns in greater detail. That's the article entitled Online Weight Management Program Leads to Glucose Improvement in Type 2 Diabetes. This research summary was written by Quinn Phillips, a freelance health writer and editor based in Wisconsin. Phillips has a degree from Harvard University. He is a former editorial assistant for diabetes self-management and has years of experience covering diabetes and related health conditions. Phillips writes on a variety of topics, but is especially interested in the intersection of health and public policy. Well, for the rest of the program, let's turn to recipes. And this recipe is labeled a holiday brisket, but it's tasty anytime in the winter, it seems to me. Holiday brisket. Juicy beef, red potatoes, and crunchy carrots all come together in this festive and flavorful brisket. Topped with homemade gravy created from the pan juices, it's a feast that's sure to satisfy the whole family. First, the nutrition information. This recipe yields 8 servings. A serving size is 3 ounces of brisket, 1 cup of vegetables, and 1 tablespoon of gravy. Each serving gives you 250 calories, 23 grams of carbohydrate, 27 grams of protein, 6 grams of fat, 2 grams of saturated fat, 76 milligrams of cholesterol, 455 milligrams of sodium, and 4 grams of fiber. Each serving constitutes 1 bread starch exchange, 1 vegetable exchange, and 3 meat exchanges. And now the ingredients. 2 medium onions, thinly sliced. 1 small, flat-cut, boneless beef brisket, in parentheses, 2 pounds, comma, well-trimmed. 1 cup reduced sodium beef or chicken broth. 2 teaspoons of dried thyme. 2 teaspoons of paprika. 2 teaspoons of garlic salt. 1 teaspoon of black pepper. 1 1/2 pounds unpeeled red potatoes, comma, cut into 1-inch pieces. 1 pound of baby carrots. 1 tablespoon of cornstarch. 1 tablespoon of cold water. And finally, 2 to 3 tablespoons of chopped fresh parsley. Now here are the directions. There are only 5 steps to these directions. Step 1, preheat oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. Arrange onion rings in roasting pan. Place brisket over onions. Drizzle broth over brisket. Combine thyme, paprika, garlic salt, and pepper in a small bowl. Sprinkle half of the mixture over the brisket. Turn the brisket over. Sprinkle with the remaining mixture. Roast, comma, covered, comma, 2 hours and 25 minutes. Step 2. Remove the brisket from the oven. Arrange potatoes and carrots around the brisket in pan juices. Roast, comma, covered, comma, 45 minutes to 1 hour, or until the brisket is fork tender and vegetables are tender. Step 3. Transfer the brisket to the cutting board. Tent loosely with foil and let stand 15 minutes. Step 4. Transfer vegetables to serving bowl using slotted spoon. Cover and keep warm. Pour pan juices into medium saucepan. Spoon off and discard any fat. Stir water into the cornstarch in a small bowl until smooth. Stir into pan juices, simmer about 5 minutes or until thickened. And in the final step, step five, carve brisket crosswise into thin slices. Serve with vegetables and gravy. And that's the holiday brisket recipe. I'll try to repeat it if I have time, so try to keep up. Ingredients: 2 medium onions, thinly sliced. 1 small, flat-cut, boneless beef brisket, 2 pounds, well-trimmed. 1 cup reduced sodium beef or chicken broth. 2 teaspoons dried thyme. 2 teaspoons paprika. 2 teaspoons garlic salt. 1 teaspoon black pepper. 1 1/2 pounds unpeeled red potatoes cut into 1-inch pieces. 1 pound of baby carrots. 1 tablespoon of cornstarch. 1 tablespoon of cold water. And 2 to 3 tablespoons of chopped fresh parsley. Now the directions. Step 1. Preheat oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. Arrange onion rings in roasting pan. Place brisket over onions. Drizzle broth over brisket. Combine thyme, paprika, garlic salt, and pepper in a small bowl. Sprinkle half of mixture over brisket. Turn brisket over. Sprinkle with remaining mixture. Roast, covered, 2 hours and 25 minutes. Well, that's about as much time as I can spend on rereading this recipe. I'll try to get to the rest of the rereading it for your recipe notes perhaps next week. But thank you once again for listening to Diabetes Forecast. I'm Dennis Kimball. I'm praying that you have a blessed evening and a very blessed tomorrow. And please stay tuned to VoiceCore, your audio access to the world.